You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast. Now, you're seeing that there are three screens. There's myself, of course. There's Tommy, the WTF1 founder, and now 2 weeks old, aren't you, Tommy?
Yeah.
From being a fetus a couple of weeks ago. And the final guest that I'm very happy to have on board. It is, of course, Ollie Webb, racing driver sensation. And just before you go to the 24-hour of Le Mans, thank you, Ollie, for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. This is my usual prime setup before Le Mans. You just have a quick chat.
all the interviews. I guess going into Le Mans quite soon, is it still kind of virtual, the stuff that's going on the sort of the run up to it, or how
it is? Yeah, super strange, because normally we'd be there already by Saturday, so having to kind of go on a Tuesday, I feel like I'm late. I genuinely spent most of Saturday, Sunday thinking, I think I'm meant to be in Le Mans.
did you text a few people like, is everyone else there? Or,
well, the worst bit was, as I was thinking that, one of my DMs throughout the weekend was, aren't you already meant to be at Le Mans? So instantly I panicked, thinking, this stranger must know the calendar better than me, I best check. And I'm texting the team like, are you sure we have nothing to do till Thursday? They're like, yep, nothing. I'm like, okay.
So when do you fly out?
So I fly out tomorrow morning. No driver's parade, no scrutineering, none of that stuff, so it's all virtual, which is a real shame, especially for those going to Le Mans for the first time. But yeah, out tomorrow, lots of testing and qualifying and Super Pole, which is new, before the race.
Nice. So, obviously, best of luck, Ollie, for that coming up. But we're going to talk about the Tuscan Grand Prix, which, Mugello had a debut, didn't it? It brought us some Formula One action. And I don't know, it was a very odd one. One of the strangest races I think I've seen in a very long time. There's some three-word race reviews. We've got McCallum 13 with Saturday, Sunday, what? Gabri underscore Tidgelio, what a race. Ertl underscore, I mean, Tommy, what is this? Ertl underscore Demolition Derby Edition, and Dawid underscore 25 underscore F1 Multiplayer Lobby. Yeah. what did we watch? What was Sunday?
Madness. Basically. Just crazy. I love the fact that you've got a new track and people weren't maybe expecting much of it, but I guess that's what happens when you throw a curveball in. Because I think a lot of drivers, we knew the drivers were going to love it. Have you ever driven there, Ollie, before?
I've driven there once before, and it's a weird one because the track is amazing, but it is the definition of a qualifying track. Like, that is the track you want to pick when you pick your favorite car and you go out and you want some amazing high-speed corners. But to race there, I was a bit dubious about what was going to happen, but that was probably the best outcome in terms of making it as exciting as it possibly could be, I suppose.
What did you race around there, Ollie?
So I raced around there in a Formula... Well, I tested there in a Formula 3. I actually never ended up racing there. But it's the kind of track which is great when you're by yourself and is normally quite processional, especially back when... God, I feel like I'm old now. Back in the day when there was no DRS... Yeah, so before World Series, when I was in Formula 3, there was no DRS, so it was even more of a procession.
Yeah, it was just such a strange... I'll go to my three-word race review in a bit, but it was just... I just couldn't really believe what was going on. It felt like we had three races. It felt like Bottas was in front, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. We had a championship fight. I thought Hamilton was going to retire when his brakes were practically on fire on the restart. There were so many things going on, but let's start... I've pretty much teed up pretty nicely what your three-word race review, Ollie, is. So let's share it with the audience.
Oh, do you know what? You're going to have to remind me what it is, because I came up with three different versions when I was speaking to you earlier.
It starts
on
with reds.
Thinking,
starts with reds.
Yeah, cause. Yeah, more and more reds. But yeah, reds cause reds, don't they?
It's the reds weirdest, cause carnage, yeah.
Reds cause carnage and reds cause reds, because we go from talking about all the reds that happened at Monza and these rules that come out that, wait, I didn't realise it was a standing start, and is it normally because when it's wet we don't see that, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh well, here's some more reds, have that.
The fact is, we hadn't had a red in 3 years, and then we had two in quick succession and one last week as well. There's a question from Angelo Rivas 3. Says, should Valtteri be blamed for what happened in the race restart from the safety car? How do you guys think the regulation should be about race restarts? Now, my opinion on that was that Valtteri did nothing wrong. He very much kept to the book in terms of maintaining a speed. He was weaving, trying to keep his tyres in a good temperature window, but he didn't do anything wrong. It was more further back where we saw a few different points of view, like afterwards in the replays, and obviously not one person got blamed, but it seemed like it was just a perfect storm of lots of people thinking that we'd gone green when we hadn't.
Yeah, I mean, I like you said, Bottas did nothing wrong, and I'm of the same opinion. He's doing the best he possibly can in that strategy and scenario within the rules, which is, you know, wait until the absolute last minute to be able to pull away to get out of that DRS and out of that slipstream. But that being said, the rules, I don't think, should be in a position where you're allowed to weave that much and allowed to be going that slow for that long, because that then becomes inevitable at the back of the pack. And in other championships, not saying it's right or wrong, but weaving from second half of the way through the lap then becomes banned for the last, you know, kilometer or so coming up to the line. And also on your data, once you start accelerating, you're not allowed to let off a single percent as you increase each percent. And that creates a steady flow. And it still means you can wait till the last minute, as long as you come out the last corner at 50K and just stick to 50K to the line. But the weaving and the... You say he maintained speed. It seemed like he slowed down a little bit down that straight. And that concertinaed up, didn't it? And we saw some amazing reactions from Grosjean, didn't we?
Yeah, it's the nature of the track, I think. I was reading a little bit more into it, and the safety car line is obviously, because it's such a huge straight and we've never raced there before, I think a lot of drivers were caught out the fact that you're coming around that final corner. Normally, the start lines tend to be quite early in Formula 1 on a lot of Formula 1 tracks. And instead, Bottas, like you say, of course he was going to do that because he didn't want to get a massive slipstream. He'd just be presenting him to be overtaken by everyone down the straight. So it's a really odd one. But one thing that came out of this, which was very surprising, I thought, was that the two Mercedes drivers actually blamed the FIA and said that they were putting the drivers in danger and basically claiming that they were trying... The reason that they're saying that the safety car light goes out too late, and Hamilton and Bottas both said they're doing it for the show and essentially putting the drivers at risk, which is a very bold thing for them to come out and say. And unsurprisingly, Michael Massey, the FIA race director, shut them down and said, absolutely not. We would never... sacrifice safety. And also a slight little dig saying, well, the F3 drivers managed to do it no problem.
And also I think on the side of that is, a lot of the time when the safety car lights go out 30 seconds before that, or even sometimes when they're getting towards turn one, on the RCNS and all the controls that they get towards the engineers, they've been informed by the FIA, safety car in this lap. And we sometimes even see it on the TV well before the lights have gone out. So it'll say safety car in this lap. Mercedes can start using DAS, they can start warming up. They shouldn't be waiting till the lights go out anyway, and there's plenty of time to get that temperature in. So I think that's a little bit of a cop-out, to be honest. And when Lewis came over the radio and blamed the safety car for turning the lights off too late, yeah, I don't think that's the right thing to say.
You can see why the cars at the back accelerated there, can't you? Because there were green lights flashing.
Totally.
And you watch some of the onboards, and oh my days, some of them were... horrendous, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a full-on IndyCar restart, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was frightening when you see that Bottas went, and you thought, ah, we're back underway, we're going to get a green racing lap, and then just absolute carnage, as you mentioned, Ollie, you know, the Grosjean comments. I find it very funny that Romain Grosjean, the man of the dangerous manoeuvres, is the one to be like, oh, he's trying to kill us, what are they doing at the front, when he's doing Max Verstappen-esque defensive manoeuvres at week in, week out with his little jolts right at the end. Oh, sorry, mate. Yeah. Sorry, mate.
I mean, fair plays to his reactions, though. He stopped on a sixpence. He was the only one that got through that. I don't know how.
How on earth? Because he got through Did he get through both accidents? I feel like he was involved in the first one as well. Obviously, it wasn't his fault, but his car, I don't understand how that car was even working by the end of it, never mind the fact that he managed to go through to the end. Unbelievable that he was still going.
His side pod was pretty damaged, wasn't it? But was it by Sainz? I can't remember who it was. No, was it Sainz?
I think Sainz was the one that... I think Sainz and Giovinazzi were the two onboards that I watched that were really quite scary, to be honest. It's when another car darts behind that they're going, and then another car kind of pulls out the side, and then the other one doesn't see that there's another car stopped in front and plows into the back. Like, I mean, you can never kind of say it enough how amazing it is that drivers can just walk out of stuff like that, because it was pretty nasty.
The speed at which K-Mag's car was revealed to Antonio Giovinazzi was just like a curtain being lifted, and he was there, and he's still... And we all do it as drivers. He's still opposite locking with no wheels connected to the ground all the way down the straight. Because before he knows it, he's in the air and he's not even realised what's happened. He's still opposite lock all the way down the straight. I'm like, you've got no wheels, mate.
Oh, God, that must have absolutely... I mean, I imagine they probably need a change of underwear, a couple of those guys, because that was frightening. That's something that I'd be scared of even in a game. There's some more questions. Noah G31, should the drivers be allowed to race overtake before the start finish line to avoid crashes like this one? I think Mugello is a very unique prospect in the fact that it's such a fast last corner where everyone can get a decent run out of there. Then you've got a really long straight. I don't think there's many others where we haven't seen this kind of problem really before to this extent, have we?
No, I think was it Spa where the safety car line either used to be or still is halfway between the bus stops? So the old Schumacher overtakes was round the outside into the last corner, and then you'd almost, or maybe it was Raikkonen, you'd almost get a place before the race had even started. And he did it at Monaco, didn't he? Was it against?
That was brilliant. Oh,
that's
so
great. And that's just clever thinking. Yeah. Oh, I did,
the fact
didn't
it got penalised. Yeah, oh my God, that killed me. I'm a Shumi fanboy, as everyone knows, and I was like, oh my God, he's got him. That's unbelievable.
Who the driver steward was that day, Matt?
Rubens Barrichello?
Damon Hill.
Oh. Damon Hill, of course it was. He's just like, slap penalty, get out of my sight.
Yeah, it was a weird one, wasn't it? Like we say about the track, similar to Baku, but we're almost lucky that not lucky, but the fact that there was a second red flag, we didn't get, as far as I remember, we didn't get another safety car rolling restart, did we? It was a red flag, so they did another sanding start. Mm. And you have to wonder if it would have happened exactly the same again, if they would have had it as a rolling start, because I imagine Hamilton leading, he'd have done exactly the same thing. They'd have just cruised down the straight as slow as he possibly could, make sure Bottas doesn't get him in the slipstream, and it could have been messy again. So they kind of dodged.
I don't know. I think they'd have been petrified after last time, that they'd probably would have given each other a pretty decent amount of space after what had happened. But yeah, it goes to show that they clearly didn't watch the support races, because, you know, as Michael Massey said, all the other support races did absolutely fine after safety cars. But another question at SXLVCE, don't know what that even means. Who was to blame for the first lap incident in the second corner? We kind of just go chopping left, right and centre. We talk about this, we talk about that, because there's so many different random events that happened at the Tuscan Grand Prix. I don't know. It's difficult to really say, isn't it? I mean, Sainz had an absolutely epic start. Like, he was flying through around the outside at turn one, wasn't he? And then obviously spun, Vettel knocked his front wing off, hit into Giovinazzi, and then Verstappen got punted. I mean, Verstappen as well, that's a thing we haven't really even spoken about as well. He got an amazing start and could have easily been P2 and potentially challenged Hamilton for the win. It seemed like the Red Bull was actually pretty hooked up. But back to the point, who was to blame for the first lap incident?
Well, I think, was it all one incident, or was it one? It was two slightly different incidents, right? One slightly further ahead, and then the pinching with Gasly in the middle with, was it Raikkonen and who was on the other side? And they were both trying to, one's trying to open the corner up. Gasly's trying to push him wide because he's like, hey, mate, I've also got Raikkonen on my left-hand side. And then Raikkonen's thinking, I'm going right down the inside here. I'm never going to be able to get in. And it was a little, I know this is such a cop-out answer, but it was a bit of a racing incident there because it was three into two doesn't go, not really one, because you can fit two side by side as we saw in the GP2 race. It was pretty much still two by two by corner five or something ridiculous. So that was a bit, I didn't see enough angles of the Sainz situation, but certainly from those three when they all shunted and then of course then went into the back of Verstappen, total racing incident, I think.
Speaking of not watching the F3 and F2 races earlier about the safety car incident, you could probably say the same for that one, because in the F2 and F3 every single incident where three cars tried to go into that chicane three wide, there was a massive accident. And that's in a Formula 3 and a Formula 2 car that are much narrower than a Formula 1 car. So it's always going to be that way. And I think it probably didn't help them that Max Verstappen had a problem and was going slowly. So they had to all try and avoid him as well. Mm. And that kind of concertinaed everyone up. And it was just the nature of turn one. And it was a bit of a recipe for disaster. I agree. The only onboard that I saw where I think anyone could have done anything was maybe Gasly just backing out of it a little bit in the middle. But at the end of the day, he's going into the corner. And like you say, two cars are just either side. And it was inevitable. But I mean,
I agree. I know what you mean. Sometimes it's hard with the wider of the with the back of the car being wider than the front. Sometimes if you keep your foot in, you can almost touch side by side and get away with it. And if you back off, your front wheels trap both of their rear wheels because they're wider and you end up making it worse. It's almost a tough one in that sense. But it is interesting, like you said, them not watching the F3 and... Well, we don't know if they did, but they definitely didn't drive like they did watch the F3 and F2 race. Yeah. But back in the day, they used to sit on the pit walls, all the F1 guys, and watch the F3000 and GP2 races. And that's what kind of gave them the infrastructure. And here, it's a circuit that most of them haven't raced at in a Formula One car, if not all of them, then, you know, they need that experience and that knowledge. You should be watching the Formula 2 race because you're like, oh, race experience. I've been side by side through a Rouge. I know that works. No one's going to try that for the first time blind without watching someone else go, he can do it, I'll do it.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense because, you know, in F3, the championship protagonist Logan Sargeant was out in that exact corner, so you would imagine that every bit of information you could possibly take from a track you haven't been round before until this weekend is something that those guys would have done, but clearly not. But it's fine, we got a good race from it, so who cares? Good race. I still don't think it's a good race. Anyway, let's go on to one more question about red flags, then we move on to my three-word race review. Boykanyo Madisha: could the regs for red flags be stricter? Because being able to change so much and having a completely new race after that seems quite gimmicky and disorganized for such a structured sport, especially where a single point can be a difference of millions of dollars in championship prize money. I don't think that they just flew a red flag because they wanted it for the banter. You know, they're not just like, oh, let's have another race. There was literally five cars exploded on the front straight. So they couldn't really have carried on apart from going through the pit lane. And I guess the amount of time it took to clear that up, that would have been five or six racing laps. So then we would have been complaining that we didn't have as long of a race. I don't know the reason behind the Stroll one, apart from the fact that maybe the barrier was damaged. Tommy, do you have any more input on that? I reckon because you're like my little correspondent on this sort of thing. You've done your research.
I think, yeah, I can only assume that the barrier...
You don't have...
No.
concrete information.
You had something similar in F2 where they went virtual, didn't they, and then did a full safety car because they're like, oh, we need to repair the barrier. But yeah, I personally saw this comment and it seems to me like maybe it's someone that's a little bit miffed as a George Russell fan that has seen the fact that Kimi Raikkonen and Grosjean, I believe it was, that got a lap back and everyone gets to restart from fresh at the end. And obviously George ultimately lost those points. I don't believe it's a gimmick though, because the one thing that springs to mind is if you really want it to be fair in inverted commas, you'd have to go back to the early 90s, which if anyone watched F1 then and is as old as me, they did when you red flagged the race, they actually did aggregate time, So there's a famous incident where 94 Japan, where they red flagged the race. Michael Schumacher's 5 seconds ahead of Damon Hill, as an example. And then the next part of the race, to make it fair, is Damon Hill has to win by 5 seconds to beat it. And for me, that, yes, that would be fair, but that would just be so confusing because we'd have Albon passing Ricciardo for P3 and then we'd be wondering what the difference was in the first race and then the second race and trying to calculate it all together. It would just be a complete farce. So for me, the best way to do a red flag is to completely reset it.
Hopefully they change to those rules for when Matty next commentates on any kind of racing. And then his job is to calculate that.
He's going to sit there.
My calculator just saying everything wrong. Yeah, 3 seconds, he's done it. Doesn't do it.
That'd be awful, wouldn't it? I can't believe that was ever a rule.
I mean, for endurance racing, going through the pits, I get it, because you've got 24 hours of bleeding racing to go through, so it doesn't matter if you lose 10 laps and they can keep the race going and keep the gaps consistent and bring the safety car through the pit lane. But I understand that red flagging it in that instant is the only option. It just seems strange that the last two races have been so weird with red flags and rules coming out that, you know, even the best F1 fan kind of forgot even existed, that we're like, what? We're doing a grid start and you don't need to pit again. And then, you know, the last two races have made us forget the last year of racing. It's so weird.
Yeah, so true.
My three-word race review is crazy but dull. And the question is, Tick to Tupper says, was this a bit like Monza, just the other way around? Crazy at the beginning, then a red flag, and it was then a bit boring towards the end. Most of it was rather dull. Like, it wasn't that good. Take out the crashes. We had a few very easy DRS overtakes into turn one. Maybe Alex Albon's was pretty good on Ricciardo because he was side by side towards going into the apex. But apart from that, DRS was a bit too powerful, I felt. And like, there was not a chance in hell that Bottas was going to beat Hamilton. Like, it's just,
no.
you just watch it and you go, oh, he's 1.5 seconds behind. He's nearly in DRS. He's never going to get in DRS, is he? He's never going to get in DRS.
And then all of a sudden he was 6 seconds behind. Out of nowhere, and I didn't even see that gap. I was like, he's 1.5, he's 1.5, he's 1.5, he's 2. And then all of a sudden, when they were doing the pit stop, it's 6 all of a sudden. I was like, yeah. Oh, I thought it was in the window. I didn't get that.
I found that so weird, because I think that the lap before, it was Bottas coming over the radio, all sassy, like, give me the different tyre to Hamilton. I'm trying to plug my headset in, I'll do it in a sec. And he's like, yeah, you know, give me the opposite to Hamilton. I want to take it to him. We're all thinking, hello,
all right, you can have
Valtteri. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's 7 seconds behind because his tyre's deflated. I can only imagine that's Mercedes pressing a button going, no, you're number two driver, mate, calm yourself down.
Oh, even at the end, there was a little bit right at the very end where it looked like Albon might even get him at the end.
Oh, that was because he caught up.
But personally, I completely disagree with you, Matt, that wasn't dull for me. I don't. The only thing... I thought the race had more action than Monza. I get why people are disappointed, because essentially in a crazy race, you normally hope for a crazy result, and we didn't get it. But if this is another classic thing, and it's happening in MotoGP without Marc Marquez, where the title's really close. If Mercedes weren't in that race, you'd have essentially had Leclerc leading, then he was being passed by Stroll, then Ricciardo takes the lead, then Stroll goes off, then Albon passes Ricciardo for the win, and we'd all be like lauding it as the greatest race ever. So
yeah,
it's just true. Unfortunate that Mercedes are just so OP this year. It's
my problem was just that the track, literally there's one overtaking spot, really.
Yeah, I didn't gel with the track either. And I found the most, although I understand that point, it would have been without the Mercedes the most exciting race, and it would have been. For me, the only bit that actually even got my heart racing was actually watching George Russell's on board for those two laps when the camera stayed on board, and his tyre, his outside sidewall was just covered in gravel every other corner because he was like going to the limit to chase Vettel, and then obviously went off and couldn't do it. But those two laps were like, oh my God, you know, F1 looks so slow on board these days because of the way they position the cameras, which I still rant about online all the time.
So bad.
But that actually looked quick. That actually looked super quick. He was on the edge.
Right, Tommy, you've kind of teed it up already, but you may as well just tee it up again because you, for some reason, love this track. So go on.
Yeah, I know. You guys just started arguing about it. So my three-word race review is Mugello is brilliant. And I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting a lot
from
the race.
No, not at all.
No, I was super impressed. I wasn't expecting a lot from this race either. I'm one of those people that there's only so many times I can watch qualifying laps where we see the incredible speed of the Formula One cars and then literally no overtaking in a race. So I'm like, it's not really worth it for them to be that quick. I'd rather have it have racing. But for me, the F2 races and F3 races were absolutely brilliant. And F1 is probably about as good as you're going to get on that track with the amount of passing and action we got. And I think if we went back there in 2022 and we had the better cars and hopefully a lot closer pecking order, I think it would be a really, really exciting track. And for me, it kind of exposes the tilk dromes like Sochi, where they're purpose-built for modern Formula One cars and you see less overtaking anyway. So personally, I liked it a lot.
I should have known, because really there was only one overtaking opportunity, which is turn one. The rest is single file. It's Monaco. But you love Monaco.
I see that argument a lot though about like, oh, there's only one overtaking opportunity, but like Monza's kind of the same, right? And no one wants that off the calendar.
Ah, come on, Parabolica's a cheeky little attempt as well.
That's pretty bold, isn't it?
Right. Question, Brian_sign says, should we consider going back to this track full time? Don't mind it. Take it or leave it. If they fancy coming back, sure.
Now swap it for Spa backwards.
Okay, agreed. Wow. And that would, my goodness me, going down the Radeon.
I think it would be good. I know I've just said how brilliant it is, but I would not be against them having almost like a wild card entry. I think the fact that race was a little bit mad and crazy makes me look forward to Imola, Nürburgring and Portimao a lot. And you could argue that Portimao and Nürburgring, there's going to be a lot more, especially Portimao, probably a lot more overtaking opportunities. It's nice to have a bit of variety on the calendar. And I think with kind of, it's so difficult with contracts, isn't it? That we're probably never going to, we'll never see another championship like this again. But it would be nice that one year they maybe replace Barcelona with Portimao or replace a certain track with another certain track. And it mixes up a little bit. And I enjoyed that excitement of having a new venue. Not necessarily have it every single year, but kind of throw a bit of a curveball in as well, because the teams always have so much data on these tracks that sometimes they can be a bit normal. And the fact that no one knew what was going to happen on that safety car restart and they all ploughed into each other, it's something different, isn't it? So
yeah.
Mugello is brilliant. Also, Tommy, not every year.
It's really well, awesome. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant track and I think it's awesome, but yeah, I just want new tracks. Like, and happily, it's not going to happen, is it? Let's be honest. Like, they're not ever going to go back. They won't have the money for it. They're never going to replace Monza because it's the home of F1 in Italy. So,
Tifosi.
I've realised actually that my joke before though about Spa backwards, you know, that has actually happened once, not in a race. But back when in the World Series package, when Lotus Formula One car or Renault Formula One car used to do their demo laps, Bruno Senna asked, because the noise limit, they couldn't go all the way around the track. He asked if he could just go up and down Eau Rouge and La Source instead. So he duct taped his iPhone to his hand and drove a Formula One car one-handed up and down Eau Rouge and did the whole track backwards on the way back into the pit. God. So that footage is somewhere, but I don't think Renault let him take it off his phone, but he does still have it.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
That sounds epic. I hope there is some footage somewhere. Right, let's talk about Hamilton versus Bottas a little bit. Boehner_YT says, do you think Mercedes were right to put Hamilton and Bottas both on the same tyres and go against Bottas's request? Now, how I understand this is that Bottas was obviously saying that, thinking that Hamilton was going to pit first because that is the team thing that they have. Obviously, if there's a fight and they're quite close, first place always gets priority. But the problem was Bottas fell away. We mentioned the vibrations in his tyres. See, for some reason, he lost so much time. You know, he was nearly 7 seconds behind Hamilton, which was crazy. So that's the reason in my head as to why Mercedes put him on the hards, because there was no way he was going to get to the end on softs, looking at the data and how long they lasted on the mediums. Well, with the stoppages, obviously, but it looked like the softs wouldn't have gone that far. So it was pretty straightforward.
They didn't go against his request, did they? He requested something. he then pitted first.
Yeah.
You can't go against, you can't do the opposite of something you don't know that's happened yet. He went onto a certain set of tyres, and then Hamilton said, well, what tyres is Bottas on? And they said, oh, he's on these tyres. And they can't go, oh, sorry, mate, we did pinky promise him last lap. We can't go back on it. That was it.
We've only got inters for you, mate. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, I don't understand how people on Twitter came to the conclusion that Hamilton, them pitting Hamilton second for the same tyres is somehow screwing Bottas and showing that he's a number two driver. It's like, pit first, like, of course that's going to happen. Like, if Bottas pits second, then he can make this tie gamble that he wanted to do. But the fact was something happened and he dropped off a load of time. So
we are just terribly British and don't like anyone other than the underdog doing well.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, it, yeah, as I mentioned before, it was, we just knew as soon as, well, Bottas obviously got in the lead from the, in the first phase, and we thought, hello, a race. And I think the Bottas would have probably done the Hamilton and sort of managed the race, because it seemed like he was at least on pace with Hamilton throughout the entire weekend. You know, free, I love how the stats was free practice one, free practice two, free practice three, he was top. Q1, Q2, he was top. Hamilton, Q3, top. And then in the race, Hamilton was on top. So literally the only two sessions that mattered, Bottas couldn't perform.
It's mad, isn't
which
it?
Which was, it's such a shame. And, you know, I tweeted that I want Nico Rosberg back, and I still very much, I would like to go back 3 years and just say to myself, look, this is better than what you're going to get.
Yeah, and it was forward. At the time, we were all, you guys probably touched on this so many times, but it's just at the time, we were like, oh, he's just not quick enough compared to Lewis. Yeah. Now we want that back, don't we? I mean, that is super impressive what he did.
Yeah, the Rosberg had like 8 wins, didn't he, or something on his championship year. And I mean, if Bottas had 8 wins, the apocalypse has actually happened. Like, there's not a chance, Valtteri's, unless we do Russia 8 times, and that's not going to happen. Hopefully. Yeah. Maybe Russia.
I think there's that stat, wasn't there, that Bottas has got the same number of wins in his entire Mercedes career than Rosberg had in 2016. So,
oh, no way.
Crazy.
No. Rip. Let's not talk about Bottas anymore. I will get into serious bashing. Let's talk about Albon podium. Some positivity.
Hey!
This man, hey, my goodness me, I'm so happy for him. There was a point in the race where we were all debating whether we wanted Ricciardo or Albon on the podium. We didn't really know which one we wanted, although deep down I think Albon, just purely because he'd never been on the podium. Ricciardo's a race winner, he'll get over it. But he didn't make it easy for himself, did he? He was he loves to make it very difficult, because he was a very good position in that last, was it the last restart or the one, I lose track, but where he went from, was it third or fourth to seventh?
Yeah, second. Can't remember exactly. I think that might have been the second restart where he dropped below everyone, and I think I messaged you, Matt, and said, oh my God, Albon, this is Albon's. Yeah, this is his chance for a podium. I cannot believe he's bottled it. And fair play, he got back through the pack, made a great move on Ricciardo. And yeah, finally.
Did it the hard way. And that move on Ricciardo, I think, like you alluded to earlier, Matty, that was probably the best turn one overtake, because they were, because even when he pulled out, I thought, nah, he's not. It's not alongside enough, you know. Not, it should be done at least 500 meters before that. Whereas actually, you know, he was only half a car width to a car width side by side when he turned in, and he kept it pinned all the way out to the grass. And Ricciardo, you know, they were proper wheel to wheel. I did like that move.
Yeah, really good,
especially on Ricciardo as well. He's not an easy man to overtake, is he, Tommy?
Especially when he's gonna be doing everything to get that podium, because Renault still haven't got one, and that was everyone tweeting about, you know, Cyril beat Ball's tattoo, he's going to get a tattoo and all this.
Oh, yeah.
And then just robbed at the end. I think I saw something like Ricciardo's finished fourth 3 or 4 times, I think, now in the last 6 races, which it must hurt for them.
But also, Renault, I think, will take that as well.
It's a great constructor's points, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be happy. So let's ask a question about Albon. Isabella DZM, do you think that Alex's podium gives Red Bull a more clear vision of who they're going to sign for next season? No, I don't think so at all. Genuinely, I would, as I alluded to at the start of the weekend and after qualifying, Mugello was more a case that Red Bull have a decent car, and they were pretty close to Mercedes over one lap pace, rather than Alex Albon stepping it up and closing that gap to Max. I think it was just over 4 tenths in qualifying, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but at the same time, I don't think it's a sensational performance from Alex. And, you know, he's finally, you know, found the form that he needs to be a good number two driver. I think when we go to the other tracks where Red Bull are mixing it in with the rest of the midfield, it could be that same way. But at the same time, I would like to see Alex at least get some momentum from this podium. Maybe he's figured something out in his head mentally, because, you know, after the amount of interviews he'd have after the race, and he'd just be so dejected, so down. But, you know, I'd like to stay positive with Alex, but I don't see Red Bull hanging on to him for too long unless he really does take it to Max.
Ooh, I was going to say, I think it's weird, isn't it? Because they're going to... I don't think it was ever an option they were going to replace him mid-season.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But yeah.
No, I know. But it is true, isn't it, that you can argue that people will say, well, now he's got a podium, he's proved to Red Bull that he should be there. But then you can prove, well, if Gasly won a race for AlphaTauri, what more does Gasly have to do to get back in the Red Bull? So it's such a difficult one. If anything, it probably gives them more trouble. I don't know. It's just a difficult situation. I can only hope, like you were saying, Matt, that this is just maybe the start of something new where he's got that kind of doubt in his mind off, and it's like it's out his head now, and he knows that at least he's got that podium in the bag. People can stop talking about it and he can just move forward and hopefully start getting better results. I don't know. I mean, we have a racing driver here. What, like, in terms of results, like, how much does that play on your mind that when you get that result that you need?
I think mentally, like you said, it's a very good point. It'll push him on to getting a more, I would word it, legitimate result, which you can use in your defense when you're trying to regain a contract or push yourself to another team. It's always a bit hard and weird when you have a crazy race like this and you get a podium out of it. Because yes, okay, mentally you've got that off your back now. Now I would say he can propel that to get the results that will really deserve him to be there, which we all know he's, I think, capable of. Relying on just that podium alone, I don't think will do much. Certainly for me doesn't have as much oomph, shall we say, in its CV as the Gasly defending off Sainz with DRS and with a legitimate, you know, that for me wasn't a fluke. Oh, you know, he just gains a pit stop and he's going to win. He held on to a lot of pressure and was quick all the time to do that. Not taking anything away from Albon's weekend, because he pushed, you know, he made it hard for himself. Like the team came over the radio and said, you know, you did that the hard way around, mate. So they like overtakers, and he's definitely one of them. So hopefully it pushes him onto some more legitimate qualifying results as well as race results.
Yeah, he's got great racecraft. I think that's something that we can't really deny. You know, we've seen it at Spa last year and lots of times where he's made it difficult for himself. But I guess if Red Bull were to dissect that race, without that final red flag, he's not getting a podium, I don't think, because they're all, you know, it's an even field after that. They're all on soft tyres and the Red Bull was genuinely much quicker than the Renault. But whether he would have got that podium without Stroll crashing, but obviously, you know, Lance did and ran out of talent and all that good stuff. But he's having a great season as well. I don't want to be horrible to Lance. But yeah, it's... And he had a failure, didn't he, anyway?
He had a puncture. I was about to come fully to his defence.
Ran out of talent. Ran out of tyre. That's what I meant to say.
he has had an amazing season.
He has. Amazing. He really has. And maybe we'll just have a quick chat about him before we dive into George Russell and then ABCD F1. Lance, yeah, he was fourth in the championship before the end of this race. And I think that a lot of people... the haters out there, I sounded like one about 10 seconds ago. I promise I'm not. he's having a great season. And I think when we look at it and how he's performed, he is as good a pick as Sergio Perez. Although, you know, it's hard to compare this weekend in particular because he had the aerodynamic upgrades and Sergio didn't. But still, Lance has sorted out his qualifying and is now decent all round.
I think he gets a lot of stick and he's doing everything he needs to on the track 100% to kind of prove that. I mean, it's a tricky one because, you know, I was talking about British people being for the underdog. I mean, people feel, you know, it's not like he's just been dropped into Formula One. It's like, oh, have a go at that. You know, he's not come out of waiting tables as a young kid and his dad been like, right, you've learnt the way now, go and race in Formula One. Here's some money. he's genuinely, as well with the FIA points now to get into F1, he's got to F1, he's doing the job, and he's quicker than Sergio, who a lot of people rate as a very, very good driver, who, let's not forget, is bringing a lot of Mexican money as well. So there's a lot of money that's involved in Formula 1, but I think a lot of the time we get too caught up in that, and we forget the fact that he is doing better than Perez, and he's racing really, really well. If he just smiles a little bit more in interviews, people might start being on his side a little bit more.
Yeah,
that's the only thing for me that I struggle with.
His interview after Monza, it's like he'd finished 15th, and you know the car was on its roof.
Anything from you, Tommy? You sound like you're about to say something, and then
Stroll.
You can't do this to me, Tommy. You can't look like you're about to say something.
No, you can carry on if you want to carry on.
I don't want to butt in because you're the founder.
Yeah, it's fine. Stroll, you're right. He does seem to have this weird attitude. Maybe like the comments do get to him, where people saying that he's only in it for his dad and all this kind of stuff, and he maybe is quite downbeat on himself. But yeah, he's been having an amazing year, and I think we were tweeting about it, Matt, that if he'd have finished that race without his puncture, which is another, I think someone commented that his second DNF where it's not his fault, like a car failure, he'd have even more points. Yeah. Might have even got another podium, and he'd be miles clear fourth in the title, and people are still saying like, oh, it's just his dad and stuff. We said on the last podcast, didn't we, and now obviously Vettel's been announced, which we haven't even actually spoken about because that feels like 10 years ago that I
mentioned. Yeah, Vettel's going to Aston Martin. That was from this weekend.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it, does it?
Mad. But we said, didn't we, that with the Vettel rumors, Perez had to absolutely smash Stroll is the only way you'd say he probably was allowed to keep his seat.
Yeah,
and it would have really embarrassed them to announce it if Sergio Perez was like 100 points clear in the title of Stroll. And he hasn't. And Stroll's ahead. I know Perez missed two races, but even on the balance of things, I think Stroll would still be ahead. So
yeah, and the gaps are way bigger in other teams between A and B drivers than there are in Racing Point, where it's actually probably one of the closest. Yeah. And if not, Stroll's quicker, which is mad. I would never thought I would say that when he signed Formula 1, that Stroll is quicker than Perez. But he is at the moment.
I'm actually quite concerned as well with the severe lack of momentum that Sebastian Vettel has going into next year. If he's even going to beat Lance Stroll, that's the big concern. Lance is, as we've just mentioned, having a stellar season. He's going to go into next year. Not much is changing. Seb's going to be getting used to a completely new car. It's not.
I got excited then.
No, I was just going to say, it's not far-fetched to say that Lance Stroll will beat Sebastian Vettel next year.
Yeah.
Go on, soundbite.
Sorry, that was nowhere near as exciting as I thought it was going to be. You're right, I should have interrupted you sooner. That is such a good point, because if I was in Stroll's shoes now, I'd be nothing but excited for him to join the team, because that is even more oomph. I mean, if he beats Vettel, even in 50% of the races, even if it's 50-50, if he does that next year, I mean, I feel bad for Seb, because, you know, he's dead and buried effectively at that point, but Stroll will be fully in Formula One then, with, and I think no haters can say anything at that point.
I don't believe this for a second, but I'm just going to throw it in there for some spiciness. Lawrence Stroll hires a four-time world champion that's really just not on his A game at all to make his son look incredible, and there you go, there's the tactic. Then he can say, well, Lance beat a four-time world champion in the same car.
But you don't believe it? You're just saying stuff that other people are saying? Or is this just a hypothetical thing?
Hypothetical
thing.
Fake news is what it is.
Fake news. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Vettel, I said it before, that in 2014, when he just kind of gave up on that year when he was getting trounced by Ricciardo, he came back with a new kind of... He was like reborn again at Ferrari, and he had an amazing first year at Ferrari. Mm. I can only hope that we do see that, because it is a shame to watch him trundling around in 12th fighting Kimi Raikkonen. It's not what you want to be seeing the best
wasn't
drivers.
Wasn't even fighting Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen was beating him.
He was staying ahead of George Russell in a Williams, which was it you? I can't remember if it was you, Matt, that tweeted something like, imagine waking up from a year-long coma and George Russell is fighting for position with Sebastian Vettel after that car that Ferrari had last year.
It's crazy. Speaking Great segue of... as well, Tommy, because we're about to talk about George Russell very quickly. Archie LFC says, does Russell need to score points before Mercedes consider him for 2022? No. Russell's already performed in that car. And he said it in interviews before. It's not necessarily if he lucks into a ninth or a tenth. You know, F1 teams don't look at the results. They look at the big picture of exactly what George is doing in that Williams and the performance that he's getting out of it. And the fact that he has beaten his teammate in every single qualifying session, including literally making a sandcastle this weekend just gone, it's ridiculous. I was watching that, and obviously we were doing the watch along, weren't we, Tommy? And we were like, oh, well, that's over then, isn't it? You know, Russell's lost his streak.
They cut away from him. Yeah. They literally went off board.
They cut away from him to watch Grosjean in 20th. I'm like, what are you doing? But no, I don't think so.
I feel sorry for him, because what is kind of that meme, isn't it, where you're angry and got the happy face on, that he's watching Alex, has to kind of congratulate Alex getting a podium, his mates, you know, Alex and Lando getting podiums in Formula One now, and he's still yet to score a point, when you can argue that when those three were in the junior series that George Russell was the best of the lot. And it's difficult because we do this with everything now. It jinxed him when we were talking about in the last race that if it keeps happening where he can get a point and something goes wrong, there'll start to be doubt. But he is in the worst car on the grid and he's still up there. I feel so sorry for him because, I mean, it's the tiniest little mistake. If there was no red flag, he'd have been ninth easily because the others were two laps down. It's the only
caveat I would say to that, as a driver in that position, who's a Mercedes junior driver to the best team on the grid, who's doing way better than his teammate, doing an amazing job, you know, very good with the fans, blah, blah, blah. The only caveat to that I'd say is the pressure's almost off a little bit for him because he knows he's in the worst car. He's constantly beating his teammate. He's got all the support behind him. And there's almost no other reference other than, well, as long as he beats his teammate, towards he's won the race. So that means that he can keep doing that until there's an opening in Mercedes and jump straight into there without having that pressure. And to be honest, like you said earlier, Matty, is it doesn't matter really if he ends the season with a point or not. You know, if there's a huge pile-up again at the next race and only nine cars finish and he finishes ninth, it's still better if 20 finish and he finishes 11th. That's still a way better race than him just lucking into a point. So I know he wants to finish on the podium, and it's hard for him to congratulate his team, his old teammates and friends. But at least he's there with a 100% record thinking, you know I've got a bit more of a future in F1 than some of those guys who are actually getting podiums.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you say about no pressure and going less to you, pressure. Tommy, about... Less pressure. But, and Tommy, you saying that, you know, that he... You feel sorry for him. I actually don't feel sorry for him because he has had this opportunity where less pressure and he's able to bed himself into Formula One. He gets a feel for wheel-to-wheel action. There's not really that Alex Albon kind of eyes on him. You have to get a podium. You have to beat Max Verstappen. He's had a couple of years to really get used to Formula One, get used to the tyres.
Three-year testing program.
And how it works. Sorry?
Three-year testing program before entering
literally. Yeah, so He's going to be in a great spot when he does finally get snapped up by Mercedes, or, you know, if he doesn't, then I'm not sure what he's going to do. But I think he's in a great spot moving forward in his career.
Here's a question then. Do you think it's a risk for Mercedes to hire someone to put them in the best car that has literally never scored a point, regardless of the fact that obviously that car is dreadful? Because we were saying in the last podcast, weren't we, that say someone like Gasly... He's now proved, like you were mentioning earlier, Ollie, that he's proved that he can win a Formula One race under immense pressure.
Mm.
And to play devil's advocate, can you argue that George Russell has maybe like had a couple of moments where he could get a point and he's maybe messed up a little bit? And is it a massive risk for Mercedes to put someone in their car that's literally never scored a point? It's quite a bold thing to do.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right there. Yes, it is. And that's why kind of Red Bull are quite lucky that their B team are closer to the higher end of the pack than that separation between Mercedes and Williams are. The only thing that they can do there is it's not the same as racing, but just keep getting him in that Mercedes car on the same day that Lewis and Bottas are there under testing situations and see how he is there. So they'll know more than we do, for sure. I think most people know more than I do, but he'll know, they'll know enough as to whether he can do it. But yeah, the pressure's just, it, that will be the risk, won't it?
Absolutely. Right, let's get into it. Tommy, play the jingle.
Now it's time for ABCDEF1.
Yeah.
Great. So, ABCDEF1 time. Ollie, you are new to the WTF1 podcast, but have you seen ABCDEF1 before? Do you need me to explain it to you?
Explain it to me in full, because I'll still get it wrong.
Very simple. We rate the drivers' weekends, obviously mainly Saturday, Sunday, in terms of their performance, more bearing, obviously, towards the race, and it's either A, B, C, D, E, or F in terms of the rating. Very simple. A star, sorry, is a perfect weekend, like Gasly, for example, last weekend. So we give them a rating. So probably just for sake of not talking over each other, I'll start, then Tommy, and then you, Ollie. And then we can come together as a unified grade, which is where the real trouble starts. So, right, let's start with Lewis Hamilton. A?
Yeah, I'd say A. He's not. He wasn't a faultless weekend like he's had in a lot of things. He was, I think it's mainly... All you can go on really is the fact that the start, he messed up the start, and if it maybe wouldn't have been red flagged, you could argue that maybe he might not have won the race. But yeah, A for
fair,
me.
Ollie?
Copy paste.
For the
next
Lovely.
10 races.
True. Right, so Bottas. Oh, I mean, Bottas had a very good weekend, so I want to give him an A as well, personally.
You can't give him an A if he loses 6 seconds.
Not.
An A minus.
No, I think I think a B, maybe even a C.
No, you cannot give him a C. His pace
sorry.
Was good. I'll allow a B.
Why was like
okay,
yeah,
a
his
was,
pace
a
was
too,
good,
too
but
much.
He
A was too much. I apologize.
He was on the radio saying, "Oh, I'd love a safety car. Got a safety car. Oh, I'd love to pit for Hards. Got
yeah,
got pit hard." He had I know he made the good start and he will be gutted that happened and there was a red flag and he got back ahead, but there were so many moments in that race where Bottas could have got ahead again and had the chance to do it and he didn't, so I don't think you can give him
okay not an A. Fair enough. Okay, I retract that, but
I think it's
do editing
C,
just
B.
B. I said B.
I think it's a B minus C plus situation.
Ooh, no B. I think dead B.
Okay.
A dead B. Straight down the line.
Straight
B.
down the line.
He had great pace. Bottas was on it this weekend.
In
he just
Mercedes,
didn't manage
yeah,
to... And it's difficult to follow around this track. We could see it. It's all single file. You'd love it. No overtaking. Monaco vibes. But, you know, Bottas was there or thereabouts. But, okay, let's go with a B. Leclerc. Ooh. He had obviously had an amazing start. Got up to third. I was screaming. And, you know, he started on the soft tyres. Then that fell away and then he just kind of got swallowed by the pack. Then the Ferrari strategy was pretty dead, you know, putting him on hards and then just having
it's
him
a shame
around
he
the
fell
back.
Away. It's a think, shame, isn't it, that he fell away because
yeah.
he was up there. B, I think it's not an A performance, but B, he was decent enough.
Is it not? He qualified P5 in a Ferrari.
That's a weird sentence.
Seeing as they were... I'd originally written B, but I've written C for Bottas, and Leclerc did probably better than Bottas for me. So
very much better. He's literally a tractor.
Yeah.
Ollie?
A minus, I think. I think
a
that
minus.
Was super impressive in that car.
Okay, we'll go A.
We're into the A's then. Perfect. Lovely. I win. I mean, we win, obviously. Vettel, D.
C or D, I don't really know.
Yeah, D.
What do you mean you don't know? Is that because you're afraid of me and Ollie shooting you down? Like, C or D, A, B, C or D. I don't really
know. E, F, 1.
yeah.
Was he, I'm trying to think, was he that bad? Yes, he had no pace.
He went out
all.
In Q1, didn't he? Or Q2?
No,
Q2. Yeah, 13th, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's so hard to... I mean, he didn't do anything to challenge... anyone he was driving I think at the end he it was quite a funny radio message where he was just like, well, I tried everything I could but I'm just not not there. So D,
just another
D
weekend where he's nowhere near Charles.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's D.
You're saying
harsh.
E. I thought you said D.
No,
too harsh. Is D too harsh? I don't know. I don't think it is.
I guess he's a four-time world champion, isn't he? And he's not delivering. So,
what's your thoughts, Ollie?
Yeah, I think D. If there was no, teammate qualifying in fifth and all that happening against him, then it'd be almost hard to say because it's another Williams car effectively to try and compare against, which is weird to say. But yeah. Especially for that last third of the race, it's definitely a D.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That. There you go. Right, Verstappen. I mean, we can't grade him, so we're just going to give him
B.
What do we give?
A plus for the reaction to the lights, though. You know, with a car that didn't have much power, he was already alongside the Mercedes that has a lot of power.
It was like Fred Flintstone. He was literally just like flipping, trying to run past, wasn't he, in that car?
I mean, I think it was no, because we still gave Sainz a grade when he messed up, and you could argue that Verstappen, like you say. You have to judge him on the fact that he probably would have finished third, maybe qualified, like because his pace was really good. So I reckon it's a B or an A. I didn't even think about his start that somehow if he had a power unit, he'd have been second.
Yeah.
Mm. And maybe Verstappen did it round the outside.
He would have probably gone for it, wouldn't he? I think, should we give him an A then?
Hamilton got pretty close and that was, that's so annoying. Yeah, let's just give Verstappen an A because we know he would have put in an A performance. Alex Albon.
Right, he's, I think, an A because I thought he'd bottled his chance and I was going to give him a kind of downgrade him for that he made life difficult. But he did finish where he should have and you can't really ask for more than that. I know he didn't have the greatest race and dropped down, but ultimately he got the result, so
it's near B territory for me just purely because he loves to make life hard and Red Bull is so much better than the other midfield cars around there.
Casting vote, Ollie.
A or B?
His recovery is 100% an A, but you've to get an A recovery you have to have had like a C or a D situation to get to it, so it's B.
It's a B. One of us will agree with you eventually, Tommy, but we're going to have Ollie back definitely every single time we have ABC.
Just the last bit.
We bring in Ollie for ABC F1. I don't even care if you hadn't seen the race. You can just say my grade. Carlos Sainz. Again, very difficult to grade. He had an amazing start. Are we giving him a C?
I'm going to go with McLaren Tommy went said.
On the... McLaren weren't on the pace, were they? So it was a difficult track for McLaren. They were really struggled.
He was out in Q2, wasn't he, Sainz?
Yeah, I believe so. He just scraped through, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah, he scraped through.
Lando was out. Sorry. Yeah, Lando was 11th. And Carlos had a great start, so I don't know how we can give him a C, Tommy. I think he was up to like P7 before he... But then he had a little tap, then spun. I mean, crazy how light that touch
okay,
was.
Yeah, okay, B's
fine
then. We'll go B. Come on, let's get on with it.
We're all B then.
Okay, we'll go with a B. Lando Norris had quite a quiet race, but somehow finished P6, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah. I don't know
I think
that's
a solid B performance.
Yeah, he didn't set the world alight, but he just got the most... I guess that's the result they could have... they wouldn't have hoped to even get six, I don't think, in that car because they just didn't seem on the pace. So, yeah, didn't do anything wrong. B.
B.
Okay. B. Perfect. Wow, we're flying through this. Danny Rick.
Easy. A.
Yeah, A.
Yeah,
what
lovely.
Driver of the day.
If he'd have got P3, that would have been A star, I think.
Yeah.
Ocon.
D.
Well, wow, just straight in. Oof. Don't even care. Just bam.
He needs to pick up his game. I know he had the problem, but he wasn't there. He made a mistake, didn't he, in qualifying?
He did. He spun on his last lap. So, yeah, it has to be a D from what we can grade him on.
I think
that's too harsh.
From that race, probably D. But as a... I think he's super quick, and I think he's just making a lot of mistakes. I mean, there's so many times when you look, you compare their laps, and actually he's quicker in some bits, slower in the others, and actually over the weekend, not too bad. But the actual race pace, and then under pressure, and then the mistakes, and all those kind of bits add up to definitely not being the full package. Okay, I'm divulging. Yeah, for that race, D, but I love Ocon. So
D, but you're doing better, Ocon.
A, if he's listening. A, if he's listening. D, if he's microphone or headphones.
If he's listening,
working.
Of course he's listening. Hi, Esteban. Pierre Gasly. Again, he wow.
Ooh, 100%.
He caused a collision, kind of.
He was out in Q1, remember?
Yeah.
Come on, relax.
Was worst weekend you could ever have.
E.
It was awful. Yeah.
It was.
I loved the guy.
And it was super surprising
after
Monza,
a win. But yeah, because everyone was like, oh, now he's got a win. His confidence will be sky high. Out in Q1.
Yeah, I mean, come on, let's not be horrible. It's not an F performance.
What was the gap between Kvyat and Gasly in qualifying? Because it was quite a chunk, I think, for that track, which everyone else was hundreds. So
I think Tommy was about to tell us, or at least he was looking. No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It was a chunk. We'll just go with chunk as the number.
Specific chunk. Okay.
I want to give him an E. I don't want to give him an F.
E.
F's like horrendous.
Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're happy with that. We're going with that. Kvyat, he got points, didn't he? He got ninth.
He was seventh. Great result.
Wow. Okay. So that's got to be
a B. Or maybe even an A.
I'd say A.
Did we see much of him?
We didn't, but he just had a solid race.
Oh, let's give him an A then.
And a good quali. Yeah.
Let's be nice to him.
Okay.
Sergio Perez.
Oh.
Quiet race, slower than Stroll. Blamed it on aerodynamic upgrades. B.
Yeah, solid.
Okay, lovely. Let's get through this. We are flying through now. Lance Stroll. I mean, he crashed, but that was a failure, and he was doing very well up until that point. I want to give him an A.
A. Oh, I got the wrong order. Sorry, I've got to wait.
It's fine.
Tommy, it doesn't matter about your opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got two A's.
I'm outnumbered. I was going to say B, but yeah, A's. It's good.
Wow, savage. Perez gets a B, and you were going to give Lance Stroll a B as well. Shocking.
Go on, carry on.
You've just given up now. I love it. Kimi Raikkonen, he beat both the Ferraris on track, got a 5-second penalty, still beat Vettel,
even
with his 5-second penalty. That Kimi's having I don't know if he's having a great time or if the Ferraris are just having a shocking time. I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. But
he's having an awesome.
Deserves probably a B because he got that penalty for the late call.
Plus radio message equals A.
A, 100%.
Okay. An A. I mean,
beating the radio Ferraris the radio message pushed it up to an A for me.
The radio message.
He finished ninth. I don't know how his car survived that race, but finished ninth.
All right.
Finishing ahead of Ferrari again is mad. You're right. I was kind of ready for Raikkonen. I think maybe it was even like three races ago we were giving him like an F or something, saying it's a shame that his career's going to peter out, and now I'm thinking maybe he shouldn't even retire because he's been really solid.
Yeah, definitely. And very much got the sort of stranglehold over Giovinazzi again.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, all right, we'll give Raikkonen an A then. Giovinazzi?
D.
I mean, yeah, his race was over at the that part.
Where did he qualify? Well, okay. Kimi qualified 13th, Giovinazzi qualified 17th.
D or E.
D or wow. D or E. Ollie's
fitting
with the D or E. D then.
D, yeah.
Yeah, D.
Yeah. Okay. Magnussen.
F.
you're loving the Fs today. We hardly ever give Fs out. And you're just like,
last.
F.
He qualified last, and that was just not on for me.
E. Chill out.
E, okay.
Casting vote because Tommy definitely wants an F.
His reactions weren't as quick as Grosjean on that restart, were they? So probably an F.
Okay, we're giving him an F. Grosjean.
B.
But he had an all right race, didn't he? Considering he's a wheelie
B
bin.
B or C.
A wheelie bin that also managed to survive two horrendous accidents.
Yeah, so let's give him a B.
Yeah.
His team radio wants me to give him a C.
Yeah, his team radio is just, this is my opportunity to make sure everyone knows I didn't crash this time. I'm going to scream really loud. This is the worst thing I've ever seen, which is really not that bad.
So true. George Russell, Oh, it's got to be a C.
Oh.
Are you joking?
Harsh.
Bottled it.
No, oh. Absolutely not.
Did you say that for reaction value?
Yeah, I did.
It's a B.
I don't want to give him an A. It's not an A. It's not an A.
No, no, it's not an
he
A. It would have been an A if he caught Vettel and overtook him.
Yeah, yeah. He made a mistake.
But then a lot
mistake.
Of it was just bad luck. But then I didn't actually see his onboard from the restart. Was it just bad driving from him, or have either of us seen that?
He got wheel spin at the start, and then he also made a little mistake, didn't he, behind Vettel? But I don't think he would have passed him anyway, because it's just difficult to overtake. So
yeah, I think got Vettel A, B's but fair. B. It definitely could have been an A. And Latifi, well, he was having a decent little race, wasn't he, until
Carnage. Well,
Carnage.
Mm. Yeah,
I think a
C.
B. I mean, he was ahead of Russell, wasn't he, when it happened? Or was he behind?
I can't give him a B because of the fact that he still got beaten in qualifying by Russell when, like, okay. Say Russell.
All right.
Went in the
Ollie, B or C?
B. Well, no, because no. I think okay, C for the race, but I think the qualifying. The qualifying issue with Russell was that was a huge moment, and the gravel makes it super exaggerated, but it's flat out, okay, and what only one tire kind of went in, digged in or whatever, and then the next corner was a right-hander, so it wasn't on that dirty tire. Now, I'm not saying what he did wasn't anything bar miraculous, which it was. He wouldn't have lost anywhere near a time as much as it looked like he did.
Okay.
Dramatically.
How much time do you reckon? What, a couple of tenths?
At least 5 seconds.
5 seconds? No, I'm joking. Pole.
a couple of tenths, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
If Latifi gets a B, though, surely we have to upgrade Russell to an A.
But Latifi was in the mix until
actually,
that's
a good point.
Crash. I don't know, like, Latifi's like B minus. Russell's in B plus territory, but we don't have minuses and pluses in this show. So.
Oh, do we not?
Okay, all right. We'll give him a C then. Look, all right. Negative, Nelly. Let's give Latifi a C and Russell a B.
Just for the people that make Lewis A, F for everyone else.
Tommy woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. Poor old Latifi. Right, okay, let's dive into our Mugello GP predictions. Of course, sorry, Ollie, you didn't have any, but we can go to your Russian Grand Prix predictions very shortly. My two were boring Mercedes 1-2. Which, half a point.
Shut up.
Half a point. Mercedes 1-2.
No, you're not
half a
it.
Point. Half a point.
You didn't jinx him.
Okay, you fine. Tried. Yeah, I went for the jinx. Boring Mercedes 1-2. But it was a Mercedes 1-2. I'm being ripped off. Fine. It was boring.
Okay, well, I'm getting half a point later, so it's fine.
I'm looking at your two, and I'm not sure how you're getting that. But anyway, half a point for boring Mercedes 1-2. 100%.
Yeah,
million
fine.
Percent.
Okay.
And sunny throughout whole weekend. Yes, it was, which is again very sad.
Cool. Leclerc top five finish then half a point because he did it in qualifying, and Russell in Q2, which he would have done if he had not been on the gravel. So another half
so
point.
You're saying, jog on. Oh dear. Okay, and the two fans were Midwest F1 fan back to the usual podium crew, which it was not. Mm-hmm. And Chile, Vegas, three different cars in the top three. Also no. So, unfortunately, fans, you were wrong. Russian Grand Prix predictions. Let's start with your two, Ollie. Can you remember them?
Can I remember them? Have we already spoken about this? Can't remember them at all, then.
No.
I will remember them. I'll remember them via the power of my phone, which is...
Okay, so Tommy, you go then. You your two first.
Okay, there will be an incident into the stupid... turn 2/3 on the opening lap because that corner is just
which
jokes.
Is kind of turn 1 everyone thinks it is
really,
is it
and Sainz podium. I've just gone bold, why not.
Wow, real big bold. I've gone for Bottas wins, not bold at all, and Albon not in the top five because I think Albon will be off the pace again and the hype will be finished.
Now he's the
Ollie,
negative
do you have your two?
Nelly.
I remember them now and
I remember
was,
them by reading
exactly which remembering to read's one thing. No red flags, which is a pretty much of a cop-out because I'm going
we'll give you a point now. Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. Actually, no, I'm commentating, so there probably will be a red flag or some sort of hour or two to have to fill.
And then I've gone for a bold one as well. Russell in the points.
Any reasoning behind that or just belief?
Just pure sheer belief.
Nice.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And the two fans ones are Moe Jungo says, based on the past few Grand Prix, no retirements during the race. No retirements. I don't think
I take back what I said just before.
And you, Ryan, says both Ferraris in Q3. I don't think that's going to happen either. Have you seen the straight down towards turn two and three? Anyway, that is it. We're done. Finally, this has been a very long podcast. I'm sorry. Sorry, Ollie. We did tell you it would only be 10 minutes.
No, it's great fun.
You're here 70 minutes later. But
can we review Monza again?
Let's do it. Final thoughts, I guess. Obviously, we mentioned Le Mans at the top of the show, Ollie. What are you expecting going into the race? Are you hoping for a good result?
I'm hoping for 24 hours of racing, first of all.
That
is my first. And lots of rain, which is not going to happen, unfortunately. But if it rained the whole time, then for 99.9% of you who don't watch FIAWC, we are very quick in the rain. So we want it to rain a lot. And
you know, I just need to tweet that it will be sunny, and then it will be torrential downpours of rain.
Please, so, do that.
I'll do that for you. Don't worry. But that is it. Thank you, everybody, for watching the WTF1 podcast. Thank you to Ollie for coming along. Ollie Webb, if you want to go search him on social medias, he's very good at social media, it has to be said. You know, every time I go away, I just try and do a cooler story than you, but it just doesn't happen. We'll leave all the links to Ollie's social profiles in the description. Tommy, any final thoughts from you before we go?
When you're mentioning, F for everyone.
F for everyone. Ollie, any final thoughts from you?
No, I just took away Tom's final thoughts. I didn't actually say it was going to be F.
I thought that was his final thought. Sorry, Tommy.
It's fine. A very long podcast for a very long race that felt like ages. So there you go.
Perfect. Mugello is still wasting people's time. Amazing. and Ollie?
That's amazing. Hopefully not a repeat of Mugello. In the next one. Hopefully another Monza.
Oh yes, please, that would be amazing. If anyone didn't know, I will be actually commentating on F1 TV and F2 for Russia, so stay tuned for whatever I come out with this time, because last time was that Dan Ticktum had a front left that was the same as a 50p pence. Let's see what rubbish phrases I come out with next time. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Obviously, give us 5 stars, thumbs up, great comments, whatever you want to do. Hashtag WTF1 podcast if you want to give us any suggestions, feedback, whatever. And that is it. See you all. I actually need to wave twice. Where's Ollie going to be? So I'm waving to you, Tommy. That's your box over there. Where's Ollie going to be? Below me?
Below
is
you.
Is he down there?
Yeah. So I need to wave there.
Bye, Ollie.
Bye, Ollie.
Ollie's waving everywhere, so he's covered off every angle. Yep. That's it. Thanks a lot, guys. See you later.
Bye.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.